Hello, podcast listeners. This is Rob again, and I'd like to ask you for a favor. As I often say, our mission here at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by helping companies improve their process safety programs. However, we can only meet our mission by working with more companies, and that's where you come in. If your company needs a PSM audit, or perhaps needs help with a process hazard analysis, or maybe you don't know how to submit an RMP plan to EPA, let us know. These are all things that we can help with. At Amplify Process Safety, we are experts in all aspects of PSM and RMP regulations, including PHAs, mechanical integrity, management of change, and we also have lots of useful knowledge related to NFPA requirements, combustible dust, etc. So if you or someone at your company could use our help or just wants to talk about some things related to process safety, please don't hesitate to reach out. Whenever you want to, you can reach me on my direct line, 207-229-0862. And as I said, if you know of anyone who can use our services, please let us know. Till next time, be safe out there.
Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. My name is Rob Bartlett. Thank you for joining us today. I'm joined by John Doan. John, what's up today?
Hey, Rob. On September 28th, the CSB released their final report about the fire and explosion that resulted in 7 injuries to contractors. So we're going to talk about that today on this podcast.
So the CSB is getting busy. We've had a number of reports that have come out recently. So today we're going to talk about this one from all the way back in 2016. That was pre-COVID. So I almost can't even think that far back. Unfortunately, we did have an incident. So I think what we want to do is we want to talk about what the details were from the incident. And then we're going to talk about what the CSB's findings were from their report. We'll talk a little bit about what their recommendations are, and then we'll throw what our thoughts and feedback would be from our experience. So to start off with the incident details, if you get in the Wayback Machine and go back to August 12th, 2016, at approximately 8:15 Central Time, there was a flash fire and explosion that happened when a contractor at a Sunoco refinery, actually not a refinery, it was a crude oil terminal, in Nederland, Texas, when it had an overpressure within a piping segment that caused, as I said, a fire explosion, and the impact and burn injuries actually impacted 7 of the contractor workers. So none of the Sunoco personnel were impacted, but 7 contractors were impacted. And basically what happened was that the day before, so they were doing work at the terminal, doing construction related to a new above ground storage tank project. And they had associated piping and et cetera related to that. And to complete the work required, they hired some contractors to help with the piping modifications. And to do that, there were 2 contractors used. One was called Elcon and another was called Carber. And apparently, I'm not sure that these companies actually exist. The report talks about the fact that they've been bought and sold, et cetera, maybe changed their names. But this is what they were called back then. So they were subcontracted to cut and isolate some piping segments. And in doing that, they used a particular isolation tool, which the subcontractor Carber, some patented isolation methodology that they use. And so the whole idea was they had to cut out a section, they isolated it, and then they were going to be welding on 2 flanges at each end of this pipe. And the pipe diameter appears to be, it's hard to tell from the information that I saw, but what, like maybe 18 inches or something like that, John?
Yeah, I was getting some 18-inch vibes from the pipe.
Yep. Okay. All right. So on August 11th, so this would have been the day before the incident happened, one of the contractors used a cold cutting method to isolate this particular piece of pipe. Oh, actually, it was 30 inches in diameter. I just found that. So it was 30 inches in diameter. So it was a big piece of pipe. So they cut it. And unfortunately, inside the piping, there was still residual material. So residual crude oil inside the piping, which was a flammable, known to have a flash point of at least less than 73 degrees Fahrenheit. So essentially, they cut the pipe. They installed these two isolation devices on either side of the pipe. And then the next day, this would have been on August 12th. This work ended up being on the night shift on August 12th. They were doing the weld work on these flanges on the two sides of this pipe. And it was during the welding of one of those flanges that there was a flash fire. So obviously, somehow there got to be an ignition inside the pipe, which was isolated with these two isolation devices, and fire and explosion. So those are kind of the basics of what happened. Now, John, what were the findings from the CSB from their investigation?
Yeah, the CSB had about five findings they listed there. One of them was just the hot work procedure. They said it wasn't adequately stated that the hot work on equipment that contained flammable material, and they didn't really clearly explain how to ensure the equipment was cleaned or decontaminated for the safety of the folks conducting the hot work. The other finding they had was just the weather at the time of the incident contributed to the flammable vapors inside the pipe. So pretty much okay, the heat of the day.
It was warm enough down there. Yeah. Ambient temperature would have been above the flash point. Okay, so that's number two.
That leading to a flammable environment. So the flammable gas, air mixture inside the pipe. So just, ready for ignition. And the other one was the atmosphere inside the pipe at the time of the incident was explosive due to the confinement of the flammable atmosphere and the isolation tool. And the ignition occurred, which exposed pretty much the ignition source, was the other finding they had. And then the last finding they had was purging the pipe with an inert gas, such as nitrogen, would have prevented the incident from occurring.
Right. So we talk about the fire triangle, fuel, oxygen, ignition source. So they knew that they had flammable material inside the pipe. They did not flush it. They did not remove that flammable material. So they also, this last finding, so they also did not inert it with an inert gas such as nitrogen.
Yeah.
So essentially, they did have, rather than having an inert, having the fuel and then the heat from the welding, which would be an ignition source, they did have that third piece of the fire triangle with flammable atmosphere, as opposed to if they had inerted it, they would not have had that flammable atmosphere. That's what they're saying, right?
Yep, pretty much.
All right. So the CSB, basically, what their findings were was that the hot work was done on equipment that actually did contain an explosive atmosphere. And when they had when it was exposed to an ignition source, which would have been the heat from the welding, they had an explosion event. And they also said a contributing cause from that was ineffective implementation and execution of their policies for hot work by all three parties, from Sunoco as well as the two contractors, right?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So those are the basics of what they found. And I guess the last thing that we wanted to point out from the report here is the key lessons that they had. Of course, that's the purpose of the CSB doing these investigations, is so that we can all learn from what mistakes other people make and hopefully not make those same mistakes. So they actually, in the report, they state three of them. The first one is, when isolating equipment in preparation for hot work, ensure the internal atmosphere is not flammable. In the report, they pointed out that OSHA's regulatory requirements, as well as NFPA's industry guidance, both say that we should not be doing hot work. We shall not be doing hot work on equipment that contains a flammable atmosphere. So we need to make sure we're cleaning equipment, purging it with inert gas such as nitrogen, filling it with water. There's all sorts of ways you can minimize the risk. But the key is that when you're isolating equipment to do hot work, we've got to make sure that we can't have a flammable atmosphere inside that equipment. So that's number one. Number two was to make sure that you assess all of the possible fuel sources, when performing hot work to adequately assess the risks and implement sufficient mitigation strategies to prevent incidents. So this really gets down to understanding what the process is that you're going to be doing and understanding basic flammability and making sure that we're taking away at least one, if not two, legs of that fire triangle to make sure that when we do the hot work, because by definition, hot work is going to be an ignition source. So how do we make sure that that doesn't happen? And we've got to make sure that we identify and assess all of those flammable, potential flammable materials and combustible materials in the area to make sure that we're not going to cause a problem. And then the third key lesson that they point out, that CSB points out, is that they actually point to their hot work safety bulletin, which was released in February of 2010. And they say the keys to preventing hot work incidents are using alternative methods to hot work, analyzing and controlling the hazards of the job, conducting effective atmospheric monitoring, testing the general area for potential flammable conditions, using written permits that specify the hazards and required precautions, training effectively on hot work policies and procedures, and providing adequate contractor supervision. So I think if you look at what happened here, I think a little, you can point to, for each of those examples that they list here, you can point to where the process in Sunoco, at the Sunoco terminal, fell apart and unfortunately hurt seven people. Luckily, there were no fatalities, but certainly could have very easily been fatalities in something like this. They definitely were lucky from that standpoint. So, John, your experience, you've done more work in the oil and gas industry than I have. What's your, from your experience, what are some of the thoughts that come to your mind about this sort of an incident?
I think some of the thoughts that came to mind, I think I've seen those plugs being done before. Some idea I have just looking at the report was just more of cleaning and decon. I think when they're putting the plug in, they were aware there was fluids in there, or at least hydrocarbons, so they drained it. But looking at the picture of what they had, it was a big diameter piping, but the pipe length seemed fairly short when it comes to pipe runs. So I don't really know if they washed it, drained it, decontaminated it, cleaned it, what they would have done. But that's the first thing I would have thought, like removing the hazard. You know, you were aware that this was in service and had hydrocarbon. So I would have thought they would have either cleaned it or decontaminated it so that they had an open pipe to work with. And honestly, with the open pipe, you probably didn't need the plugs, but the plugs could have been used for something else. Maybe just further safety of just isolating both sides of the job so that you didn't accidentally gas out the other side.
Right.
But that's just my thoughts, use of the plugs. And the use of the plugs is nice isolations. I've seen it before where they just needed a plug to isolate it so that they could do work downstream of it. The plugs has a nice pressure barrier so that if it did see an overpressure, it would just go to the vent. I said overpressure. If there was vapors venting off of it, it would have vented out. Obviously, there's an overpressure above what the plug can do. It's going to come out like this.
So the vent would really be for the vapors generated from heating up of the pipe, or maybe from ambient temperature or whatever. You don't want to have that pressure build up inside, so you vent it. However, that vent isn't designed for a flash fire, isn't designed for that sort of a pressure wave, right?
No, it's just this maybe half inch thick hose or whatever it is. So it's not designed for overpressures.
Yeah.
It's just one, that's part of it. It's more of, you know, like you said, removing that fire triangle. If you can't get rid of fuel or the oxygen, either replace it or remove it. So the other thought I would figure they would have done is just inerted it, just put some nitrogen gas in there as a blanket to prevent potential ignition.
Right. A couple of things came to my mind just based on my experience. One is the CSB did mention it, but overseeing contractors. And I've got no idea how much oversight Sunoco gave this process. Maybe they were on top of them and this happened anyway. And we all know that that's a risk, but it certainly does point to the fact that we always want to make sure whenever we have contractors doing anything that could be hazardous, make sure that we're paying attention to what they're doing, that making sure that we're dealing with all the hazards that they might be seeing, and maybe their work is generating hazards that we didn't anticipate. I've had that happen before, and it's like, okay, let's stop, take a step back, figure out what we need to do with this new information to make sure that we do the job safely. And then the other thing that I just thought of is, you know, they put the plug on either side of this 30-inch, you know, this 30-inch diameter pipe. And whenever you do that, and you know, maybe you have a vent, but it's just like a relief device on a vessel. If that relief device is not designed and installed adequately so that you can relieve the pressure in some sort of overpressure situation, whether that's an external fire, whether that's an internal deflagration, whether that's a runaway reaction, whatever, then it's not going to do you any good. And that's, you know, essentially that's the same thing here. They had some venting that would have taken care of normal vapor generation, but not enough to deal with, you know, an internal, what essentially became an internal deflagration.
Yeah.
So we've always got to think about what are we going to do with the pressure? If we generate pressure from something, what's going to happen to it? And unfortunately, in this case, those plugs were the weak point. They blew out, and you know, I don't know exactly how the people that got hurt, whether they got hit by the debris, whether it was more of a flash fire situation and they got burned that way. I'm not sure, but you know, those are certainly things that you need to think about when you're doing some sort of an activity like this. So, all right, John, anything else about this incident that comes to mind that we should get out there to the folks?
Yeah, I think most of it's just talking about like hot work. What usually comes to mind when I think of like pipe segments and pipelines and hydrocarbon services are, you know, hot works. They're usually set for 12-hour days, or the permit's good for 12 hours. But a lot can happen in 12 hours, especially, you know, in the fall. I don't know how it is up northeast, but, you know, you got cool mornings. You do your hot work permit before you start the job. Then it becomes 80 degrees during the middle of the day. You know, there's a big difference between 50 degrees and 80 degrees. So things could be cooking at lunchtime when you're coming back from break. So it doesn't hurt to remeasure before starting the job back up when you come back from lunch, and not just the area you're welding, but like inside the equipment you're welding. If you're working on a recently live line, or if you're working on lining that was just recently isolated, you know, you wish every valve holds, but sometimes valves don't hold. Or you have a bottom, just some crude oil that, you know, starts cooking at 80 degrees. So just stuff like that. You kind of have to be aware.
Yeah, that actually makes me think of the incident that happened about 10 years ago at the DuPont facility up near Buffalo, where they had contractors welding on a tank. And inside the tank, it was an area that was never supposed to have flammable vapors in it. And obviously it did. And nobody checked the inside of that. So we should always make sure that we are fully aware of where we have flammable materials and not make assumptions. Whether that assumption is there's not supposed to be any flammables in there, so we don't need to worry about it. Or, well, I checked it this morning when it was 50 degrees out and we didn't have an LEL. I don't need to worry about it now, even though it's 90 degrees outside. So definitely want to make sure that we're fully aware of the situation. So
for sure.
All right. Great. Well, podcast listeners, I guess that I'll leave you with a couple of questions. First off, does your organization have adequate hot work procedures, or how would you work through the issues that Sunoco and their contractors dealt with here? Do you oversee the work of contractors to verify that they're doing hot work correctly and not doing hot work in areas that and or situations that are particularly dangerous? John and I would love to hear what you think. Send us a voicemail using the link in our podcast description, or you can always shoot an email to podcast@amplifyconsultants.com.
And finally, our goal at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems. As it is our firm belief that these systems will help prevent the catastrophic incidents like fires, explosions, and toxic release. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us if we can help guide you on your process safety journey.
Thanks, John. I appreciate that and appreciate your input today. And everybody else out there, thank you for listening. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.